Well, peace be with you. It's good to see you again this week. And I had two ministers from the first service say, boy, I'm glad it's you up the front talking about money, Jonathan, and not me. Which makes me a little bit nervous about going at it a second time, but we'll see how we go. Let me say a prayer. Lord, speak to us. Bring down those things that we have as barriers between us and you. Open our heart out to hear the truth of the matter. Don't let us be half-hearted Christians, half-tanked Christians, lukewarm Christians. Help us to be people who are on fire for you and understand your will for our life and for this world. Don't let us walk through this life half-baked. But give us a picture of what we can be and give us the courage, Lord, to walk into it. In your name we ask. Amen. I know that talking about money is fully controversial. And if you're here for the first time, yes, it's true. The church only ever talks about money. And here you are, and we're right on this topic. It does cause some anxiety for some people. And it's certainly a little space in our life that we don't like invaded or talked about too much, particularly from the front or from the pulpit. During this week and today, if you don't have access to our electronic media, we will be giving you a little brochure, a little publication, which we are calling The Seed Story for 2015. And in that is some really great stories, a whole pile of different things, but also a response card. And this week, but particularly next week, I'm going to be asking you to consider your gift for 2016 towards this church. And as part of that, I get this great sense of a gathering momentum of what God is doing amongst us. And I get this feeling of God's fingerprints printed all over a whole pile of things that we are up to and what this church is actually about. And so much so that, you know, it's really exciting. You don't look as excited as I do, but I'm really excited. And because I get this sense that this God who we talk about is active amongst us. It's not just a head knowledge, but I'm beginning to see it more and more with my own eyes. And I trust that you are as well. One of the exciting things that we'll be launching next year is a little intern program which Shane and his team and myself have been talking about, and we're doing it in partnership with the Synod, the United Church Synod. And so there's a little bit of money going towards that, and the Synod are putting in some money in that as well. But it's a way in which we can raise up another generation of leadership, and we can bring more leaders into this experience of what it is to be a leader in a church, and so that our churches in time, if we continue to do this, will stand strong because we have well-trained, godly leaders who will take us forward. I want to give you an application straight away at the start of my little talk to you this morning. Because often in life, maybe this is a bloke thing, I don't know. Tell me afterwards. But often in life, we compartmentalize a lot of life. And we box it away into little areas. So I've got a whole pile of little boxes here that are illustrative of what we do. So we've got a Bible box, okay, when we might do that every now and again. Oh, look, this one came up straight away. Wow, that's a beauty, isn't it? What's that one? And then we have, I'm not taking any heckling this morning. Then we have like an attitude box, and we have, Wednesday night, of course, it's the home group box. So let's bring that out, okay? And then, oh, heavens above, you know, we've got a money box, haven't we? You know, and not just a money box, but a box that we put all our money stuff in. And then we've got, so many other things, you know, relational box. It's a bit heavier, this one. Got a bit of baggage in it, I'd say. Who's got that spare time box? You know, like, you know, compartmentalize them away. And then, the what we think about box. A TV box? Do they call it TiVo? Is that what it is? I'm only joking. Then, look, there's just so many boxes that we have in our life, like sport. Of course, we've got a work box, haven't we? Yep, put that one up there for the moment. The what comes out of our mouth box. Okay. Which doesn't always connect with the values box, does it? Or, for that matter, with the internet box. There's a few more. I've nearly finished. Here's a topical one. How we treat our strangers box. A bit of an issue going on at the moment. This is not a problem for anybody. How we drive box. There's some people squirming in their seats at the moment. Don't follow behind me is all I can say. Church box, or faith box, or a religion box, or a God box. That's interesting, isn't it? Honesty box. Children's box. It's interesting, isn't it? There's so many different boxes. Of course, the last one is the best, isn't it? The social media box. You know, that's an interesting, isn't it? So the thing is, we've got all these boxes, and we do our best not to let them touch. And certainly, we don't want them to touch. We don't want them to be ripped open and intermixed, do we? Because, we wouldn't want the social media box and the honesty box to touch, would we? If you've followed social media this week, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Or, for instance, would we want... never. Where is the one I'm looking for? We don't want the work box to touch anywhere near the spare time box, do we? If that's the weekend and this is work, well, these two do not mix at all, do they? No. Well, what about this one? And this one, what comes out of our mouth in the sport box? I mean, you wouldn't want to say anything to the umpire, would you? But I'll tell you what, this one here, this faith box, church box, this relationship with God box, now that is one we do not want touching with many other things, do we? I mean, this relationship with God box, do we want it touching with the internet? We certainly, whatever, do not let these two talk to each other, do we? It's almost like they've got magnets in them that I can't push them together. Because our faith and our money, we're not really sure we want them together. But I tell you what, God doesn't see these little boxes. What he sees is all of life, everything. And so, what he wants us to do is to put things like social media and honesty together, mix it with our values, our children, how we drive, how we treat strangers, what we think about. All these boxes, our spare time, our TV, our work, our relationships, all of them, he puts them all in there together and says, guess what? You might think they're little boxes. You might think they're separated and you can pull them apart. But I'm sorry, that's not how I view you. That might be what you think is right and appropriate. That's not how it is. And so today, with that in mind, I want to talk about this one. This little neat package box, although it's got a little bit of a tear in the middle, the corner of it. I actually toyed with filling it with little polystyrene balls. You know those ones from the bean bags? And opening it out, but I had pity on the cleaners because I'd never go in. But you know what it does? It sticks, doesn't it? It sticks to everything and it sort of goes everywhere and permeates everything. And that's what I want to talk to you about today and next week. That's what I want to open out to you, want to get rid of these neat little compartmentalized little boxes that we have our control going on and we package things and hold them. I want to pull them apart. And I'll do it this week with the topic of money and later on I want to do it with other things. But But in particular, I want to address a really interesting thing in the life of the church, and that is the topic of tithing. When it comes to money, the topic of tithing. And certainly talking about tithing is a whole surefire way to cause controversy. But I want to bring some focus to this and narrow down our fuzzy thinking and to give you some understanding of what it looks like, not just back then, not just way back in the Old Testament, but how it applies to today and how we deal with it at this moment. Tithing, for which most people, if you'd ask them, says, yes, 10%, is an Old Testament concept. Some people would say the tithing is the minimum, and then you have tithes as 10%, and then you make an offering over the top of that. Whatever the case is, the people of God, the Israelites, were expected to bring their tithes and offerings to the temple as thanksgiving to God. And there were certain rules and very defined rules about how the Israelites were to tithe and how their practice of tithing was governed. So today I want to ask the strange question, is tithing a current application that we should follow? It's not as boring as it sounds, and actually it's going to get real awkward real quick, let me warn you. The topic of tithing touches the heart of biblical understanding, and it pushes us into a place in as much as where do we get how do we understand the Old Testament as it correlates across to the New Testament? And that's certainly a complicated conversation. Tithing was part of the covenantal system that the nation of Israel were under. It was the covenant. You've heard me talk about covenant before, this banner over them, this agreement that God had with this nation to protect them and to look after them under certain stipulations. And the covenant is the agreement, it's the set of it's the DNA that set apart the people and formed them into God's people. It was meant to be illustrative. It was meant to paint a picture. So when they lived under the covenant, there were certain things were meant to happen. One of those things was that other peoples, other nations, were supposed to see what life was like when you lived as with God as your king. And other nations were supposed to go, that's what it's like to live with this Lord over the nation. And it was meant to be attractive. And if you looked at the covenantal system, if you looked at the laws, they were very different than what was happening around the world at that time. And there was a whole pile of things going on. For instance, there was stuff that was meant to be set aside for the poor. There was meant to be forgiveness of debts. There was meant to be a social justice system in a way that you could get justice that wasn't just a might overtaking the weak. There was a whole pile of things. It was meant to be attractive. And people were meant to see it and go, I can see God by the way these people live. The only problem is that for most of the history, they could not live out the parameters of the covenant. And so what we have in the Old Testament, and if you read through it, you go, what is wrong with these people? It's like, they form this agreement with God and then they go, oh, gee, it looks a bit attractive over here. Might wander off over here for a little while. And God says, hang on a minute. And so he sends his prophets and his priests and they go, whoa, come back. What are you doing? You're going. And then, you know, this tragedy happens and they go, oh, we've got to get back to God. And they come back to God and it's really good. And they embrace God again. And then a generation passes and they forget all about it. So they wander back away again. It's just this backwards and forwards. But even amidst all that, they lacked the will to fully embrace God and God's kingship over their life. God was shepherding them, but they didn't get it. God was calling them and helping them, but they didn't understand it. You know, it's a bit like back in the mid-80s. I don't know if you can remember back then. I was a tradesman, tradie, and drink driving laws came in. Do you remember when drink driving laws came in? Oh, come on, guys, are you awake? Yeah, you remember that drink driving laws came in? It's not that long ago. And I remember the conversation in the workshop about drink driving. People were like, what is this? A nanny state, they're controlling us. What, you know, like, and yet, with all these disagreements about drink driving laws, yet again, we'd have a friend or a friend of a friend who had wrapped his car around a stubby pole somewhere, and they'd be off to another funeral. And then yet again, a couple weeks later, you know, there'd still be the complaints about drink driving laws, and someone else is paralyzed, or someone else was going off to another funeral. You know, just didn't understand that there are some things that are good for us and some things that are harmful for us. And that this was a good thing. And this is what God was doing to the nation of Israel, saying, there are some things that are harmful for you. I want to call you into the good things, and I want to help you out of that. In the New Testament, we find, surprisingly, that Jesus barely talks about tithing. This gives us a strong hint to how we understand tithing in the context of the New Testament, and also how we understand it in our lives today, in this application for this moment. When Jesus does address tithing, it's in a pejorative sense. That is, he is not happy with the religious leaders of the day who had got the proportions right. They did the 10%, they tithed all the bits of the spices and the bits and pieces, but they had forgotten that it was primarily designed to shape their hearts. They did the function of it, but the bits that mattered, they didn't get right. They got the method, but not the meaning. And with that thought, the shaping of hearts, we run into the New Testament understanding of tithing, or as I'd rather call it, generosity towards God. So let me pop your bubbles in regards to tithing from the New Testament. The New Testament does not endorse tithing. It goes way further. If you've got your Bibles, would you turn with me to 2 Corinthians 8? 2 Corinthians 8, verse 8. And we can pick up the Apostle Paul's thoughts on the whole matter as he was relating to these fledgling churches 50, 60, 70 years after Jesus. And we enter the section after the apostle has encouraged the Corinthian church in their generosity. And apparently he was asking the various churches to making an offering towards the church in Jerusalem. And there'd been a great famine gone through Jerusalem, and the Christians there were really struggling to eat. And so the churches, the little churches scattered all around Asia and Asia Minor, were pouring money into these churches to keep their brothers and sisters alive. And verses 8 and 9 are of particular interest in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Verse 8, Paul says this, "I'm not commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others." Now, here's the thing. Notice really quickly that in talking about making an offering, about generosity towards God, the Apostle Paul does not make a command. He was really quick to make commands, and he doesn't in this. In the Old Testament, giving tithes was a command and everybody had to do it. But the second part of the sentence from Paul tells us what it's about. It's not a command, it's about testing the genuineness of your love. It is about love. When we talk about giving towards God, it is about love. Giving is not tithing according to the New Testament. It is a love response. That's why it goes way further than 10%. Let me think about this for a moment. Love, if it's a love response, it changes the ball game. I mean, I don't think that Haley and Trent are going to give Ivy 10% of their love. Is that a pretty fair summation of what you saw this morning? You can nod your heads, that's okay. All right, you can move in church, it's all good. Okay, so I would hazard a guess that they are going to give 110%. They're going to give every single bit that they have and then just that little bit more. Wouldn't you agree with me? Yep. And even those who haven't had children, you can still get that concept. You can understand what your parents did for you. They gave you 100% of their love. I mean, imagine if you gave 10% love to your kids. there's certain services that would be knocking on your door if you did that. And that's the truth. And that's what happens. Because that's not good enough, is it? 10% of your love to your kids is just is not enough. And yet those of us that have had kids and when we held them, when they were born and we looked at them, we went, wow. Like, where did all that love come from? It was in my heart for this little child. You know what I'm talking about? Those of you who had kids, like, this is just outstanding, extraordinary, and you want to give every ounce of that to your child. I mean, my parents, they gave me more than 10% of their love. Everything that I needed was available to me. Every bit. Their love response was, what do you need? And if it's right and good for you, it's yours. You got it. You want a little bit more milk? Have some more milk. You want some more potatoes? Have some more potatoes. Maybe they shouldn't have given me so much milk and potatoes, but I would have grown a bit smaller. But everything I needed was at my disposal because they loved me so much. It wasn't a limited. It wasn't a stilted. It wasn't stingy. Which parent is stingy with their kids? They want you to have everything. Your parents wanted you to have everything, wanted you to grow and be a mature adult and grow up and take your place in this society. And they gave you what you needed for that. What generates our love response towards God? Why should we love back? Look at verse 9 with me from 2 Corinthians chapter 8. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for our sake he became poor, so that through his poverty you might become rich. Wow. His poverty, that you might become rich. Again, let me make this really simple. Giving assets away is following the model of Jesus. That's it. Giving assets away is following the model of Jesus. We love because God loved us. We respond to God because God loved us. So much so that Jesus laid down his life for us. His poverty, our riches. His shame, our glory. His alienation, our adoption. Here we have the rule of thumb for giving according to the New Testament. Here we find the tithe. It is everything in response to God's love. That's what the New Testament teaches us. So this is important for those who love Jesus, for those who want to serve him with all they have, with their lives, with their talents, with their money. When someone tells you giving to God, tithing is 10%, tell them they're wrong. It's not enough. 10% is shortchanging God. 10% is not an appropriate response to God, is making a mockery of the sacrifice of Jesus according to the New Testament. This is what it's saying to us. It's asking for everything. If you don't believe me, turn your Bibles over to Mark chapter 12. The second reading, the one we had read early to us from Mark chapter 12, verses 41 to 44. Story of the widow's offering, and you know it well, I'm sure you know it well. Jesus is camped outside the front of the temple. For some reason, he's watching what's going on at the gates of the temple. And you just had to walk in there, and there's these big brass containers, circular containers, huge big things out the front where people put their offerings in. And what you would do normally, what the accepted norm was that you would say to the temple priest who was standing there, sort of almost guarding this money, you would say the amount that you're putting in. And if you're putting in a lot, what was accepted was that you would say it loudly. I'm putting in $1,500 so that anybody around could hear you and know what you were giving. But then, here's the kicker. Imagine, big brass container, okay? Huge big thing, okay? And the coinage, the money was in coin, wasn't it? Like you didn't flip your $5 or $10 notes in there, whatever. You didn't put your Visa card in there. It was all minted money. So you tipped it in. Can you imagine the sound then that would make? Clang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang. I mean, I've never played the one-armed bandits. But I imagine that would be like, you know, when it goes off, the whole place knows what's going on. Someone's won. Like, this huge noise going in there. That was what was happening. So you made a public spectacle of your generosity to God, and you'd think that you wonder when you reflect on Jesus' words whether that's it, they received their full and final reward at that moment by the admiration of others around them. And the text tells us that Jesus perceives that those who gave like this gave out of their abundance. They were wealthy and they gave their 10% out of that. So, yep, a lot of money, but yep, they gave out of what they had. And they had enough. But then along comes along someone very different. And this widow, we now know that there was, in that day and age, under the Roman acquisition of the land, forced acquisition of the land, that it was tough times. Times were getting tougher. And we could see a few years later it got really tough. That social welfare was not so good. And it's safe to assure that she is very poor. Indeed, the text describes her as poor. So what does she do? She places in that huge, big, round container 2 copper coins. And another translation says 2 leather coins. So you imagine the difference in the sound. You could hear that first one, those other ones. I doubt if you could hear this one at all. So listen to Jesus' words to his disciples. Verse 43, calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others." I don't know. I don't think Jesus would pass any accountancy exams with that. "They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all that she had to live on." What is Jesus trying to teach his disciples? What is he trying to teach us? It's not the amount. It's not the percentage. It is the absolute commitment. It is the 100% surrender to what's going on. Do you see how total that is? You reflect on what she's done. She had 2 coins. She didn't keep one. She put them all in. She didn't keep one behind. And Jesus, perceiving this, says, wow. She didn't keep one for herself. I don't know what it does for you, but look at this. This is hardcore trust. This is total dependence. This is faith. This challenges me to my core. I don't know if you've sat and thought about that for a minute. We read that story and go, oh yeah, wow. And then read on. Jesus does some more teaching. Oh yeah, that applies to us. Just sit with this. Like this woman, to us and to our faith, you know what she does? She gives us a slap across the face. And she says, wow. Talk about lukewarm faith. Like talk about giving out of your wealth. Like talk about being half-hearted for Jesus, for God. This challenges us right at the very essence of where we're at. And this cuts to the core of who we are. Next week I'll talk a little bit more about identity. And see, for us, we are mixed up with our identity and with our wealth. And the reason we don't want people we don't want these boxes together is because we got a perception that we want to keep. And Jesus says, get rid of that. Are you in or are you out? You see, my friends, 10% is not the rule. It's not the rule because Jesus asked for all of it. There are no little boxes in God's economy. There is no playing with God in this. We can't have bitses of faith. So where does this leave us then with the whole topic of tithing? It's a good question. So wrestled with this as I tried to give you something to take home to think about. I warned you I was going to talk on money last week. I did, didn't I? I warned you, yeah. 10% is a good rule of thumb, but that's all it is. And I know there are some, there are actually some who cannot afford to give 10%. But there are also others who have the joy of giving way over 10%. 10%, yep, it's a good sort of, yep. But we're talking about a love response beyond a figure. The New Testament does not state a figure like the Old Testament because it wants us to respond out of gratitude. That's That's the bottom line. It's not law, it's not guilt, it's love. And I know people have given up work to do volunteer work full-time with complete trust in God's provision. I also know people who earn incredibly large sums of money and give most of it away to God's work. And this morning and this week, I encourage you to think prayerfully what God means to you and the benefits that knowing Jesus have brought to your life, and for you to respond out of that. My friends, this is a love response, what God is calling for. And next week I'm going to be asking you to consider how much you actually give to this church. Not to anything else, not to any other of the really good things that are going on out there, but to this church. I'll champion with no apologies the cause of this church, to God's work in this place where we're all in this together. And to be like this, we need the generosity of all of us. But that's next week. Today leaves us with a challenge to respond to God in a similar manner than our parents loved us, and certainly how God responded to us with everything. No more boxes, no more compartments. Everything on the line.